it's such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim of the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is July 9th, 2024. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 70th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyWhole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome to the Cubbyhole. But as I've stated many times before, I definitely recommend going back to show number one, start there, work your way forward in order, so that way you'll have a better understanding of the overarching message that is delivered and stored within this whole Cubbyhole podcast, okay? And as for all the studiers of this show who have gone through the shows in order chronologically, I welcome you back and thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. Hopefully this information is serving you well. And if it is, I hope that it continues to do so. There are going to be slides for today's show, so please make sure to go to cubbyhole.com and go to the top where it says podcast 51-100. Click on that. Go all the way down to show number 70. And there you will find the slides for today's show. And there's a lot of slides, and they're very important slides because it's really going to help us understand this eschatology and how important it is. And it's all about eclecticism, as I'm going to get into as we move forward. So that being said, hopefully everybody is doing well. Hopefully you guys are ready to take a deep dive into the eschatology, and hopefully you got your notepads ready, and I really hope that people do take a lot of notes when they're listening to these shows, because that is a very helpful way to really start to remember this information and even have a place where you can go back to the information. And, you know, one of the things that I do, you know, just as a side note, pun intended, is that I have an Apple phone, and one of the ways that I save information is I go into my notes and I have all kinds of categories. I mean, if you went into my notes, you would just see thousands and thousands and probably hundreds of thousands of notes. And that's because I am always taking information from, you know, I save tons of PDFs. I save tons of, you know, different conversations. I save a lot of different stories, a lot of different articles. And I write constantly. And I also, you know, go through tons of different etymologies of words. I have a whole library of definitions, or, and then, you know, I just have a whole ginormous amount of notes. And all I do is just, I know that my phone is a place, a very easy place. It's a tool that I can use anywhere at any time to save information. A lot of people are stuck still, you know, wanting to write everything in a notepad, which I have no problem with, but a lot of people just never even use this very simple technology. And I highly recommend it because it can really help you learn so much faster, more efficient, and it's just a very easy, effective way to expand your internal library as well as your library that you're saving on your phone. Okay, and that's just one way to save information. But it's just a very simple way, and plus the fact that you can even, if you have, like I have a Mac Mini that I use, and I can just, you know, when I save information, I have the cloud, so it just basically saves directly to my computer as well. So I can always bring up my notes on my computer. So I have all this information, and I also have external hard drives that I save all that information into, because just in case, you know, something happens to the computers or the phone. So anyway, just a side note, I think it's very important and crucial to be a very good note taker. And we all can improve on that. And I know that I'm always finding ways to improve. There are people that I know who do it better than I do. And that's great because it's inspiring. It makes me want to try harder. And, you know, that's really what it's about, is trying to be a better version of yourself, you know, as you go forward, you know, to improve upon the day of today, to improve, to be better tomorrow, right? And, you know, so note-taking is a huge part of learning. And then putting the information into rhetoric is also going to help you understand this information, reading out loud the information. Because what that does is that programs your internal being with that information. Because listening to it is one thing, but then hearing yourself say it is even more powerful, because then you're really starting to put that frequency into your internal library, where your memory, you know, where you're saving the information in a very clear way. Okay, because you're actually using your own willpower to speak and to say these words. And it is part of understanding the oral tradition. So that being said, what I'm going to cover today is I'm going to get into the, we're going to go further into eschatology. I'm going to cover religion. The major religions. I'm going to continue talking about the major religions that I talked about on the last episode, and really dive a lot deeper into the mystery traditions dealing with the eschatology. But before I get into that, I'm going to explain esoteric versus exoteric eschatology. Okay, and that's very, very crucial. So I'm going to share the roundtable to explain this, and the Arthurian, the King Arthurian roundtable. I'm going to show people how to use this roundtable in an image that can really help us see the bigger picture. Okay, and so hopefully, I would say probably not this show, but definitely by next show, we're going to get into where eschatology really originates from, where it's really, what it preserves, what eschatology preserves, okay? Because the science that is preserved in the eschatology is really what we're trying to get to, and it has everything to do with, first and foremost, spirit, but also the cosmos, the celestial objects, being the sun, the moon, and the stars. Okay, so we're really trying to get back to these great teachers of our world. And so if I have time, I will get into that, but if not, definitely by the next show, okay? And also, one of the things that I've been doing lately is catching us up on the prior shows, so I'm going to do that before I get into the content for today's show. And also, just keep in mind, just so we're on the same page, we're symbolically, in this show, we're symbolically still opening the chest of the third degree of esoteric Freemasonry. Okay, we're drawing out very ancient science. We're drawing out very ancient science that is the other side of this beautiful sacred bridge. Okay, so we're in the modern part of the bridge, and we're trying to build the rest of the bridge that has been crumbled in the middle of the bridge. Just think of an arch bridge with two gigantic pillars, okay? So you have your modern pillar, which is where we're at, and then you have your ancient, very ancient pillar from, you know, way back in the past, which is on the other side of the bridge. And then that arch in the middle of the bridge has been shattered. It's in shambles. And what we're trying to do is build back to that other part of the bridge. Okay? So hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully I'm painting that well in your mind. But we're currently journeying through the underworld to do this. Okay? And this is, again, this is Amenta. Okay, you can relate this to Amenta. Amenta is the sacred land. That's what it means. It's the Middle Earth. Okay, symbolically the Middle Earth, not literally, but symbolically. Okay, this is all about going, you know, deep within the darkest places of the self and really facing everything, all the darkness. So this is all about understanding the symbolic death of Osiris from when he was as the god of the living and then was dethroned or dismembered by Set. He was murdered by his brother Set, okay? So this is the death that we're symbolically going through. We're going through this ritual, right? And so what I'm trying to help people understand is all the science that is associated with this archetype to help us understand the world that we live in. And and really to help us understand ourselves first and foremost. So we're symbolically in the bottom half of the zodiac. We're in the soil, the rich black soil, and we're in the water, okay? The water and the soil, okay? This is earth, especially the soil. It's earth, okay? And this is also the womb, the great mother womb. This is the garden. This is the tomb. So this is all the lower half of the zodiac. Just think of a pendulum swing going from the autumn equinox, swinging down through the winter solstice, and then going to the spring equinox. That would be the path of the sun going through the zodiac, okay? It's making that big half arc or arch, that bottom arch or arc, okay? So that's where we get the idea of the ship, the ark, Noah's ark. And it's also part of understanding the ark of the covenant. This is the cup. This is the chalice. Okay? So there's so much to this bottom half of the zodiac. So we're going to continue. And before I get us all caught up on show number 69 and get into the content, I just wanted to let you guys know real quick, my presentation Earthbrain 3 finally has a subtitle and a date and even a time. It's going to be called Earthbrain 3 with the subtitle The Divine Synchromistic Orientation, which will be given on November 3rd this year, 2024, at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I actually put a poster up in the slides section, so that way you can check that out. You can share it. I really would appreciate anybody who's listening to share this poster, especially if you found any value in my Earthbrain 1 or Earthbrain 2 presentations. You know, just share it to your social media, share it with your friends and family. If you have a podcast, it'd be great to, you know, share it on there. It's going to be my best work that I've put out yet, my most important work that I've put out yet, more importantly, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's really going to help people understand the first and second presentations that I gave, and those presentations were limited, and this time I'm going to really simplify and take my time and really help people understand just how important it is to orient the mind properly to Earth and to the cosmos. And there is a way to do that. And it's all about geometry. The more that we understand the sacred geometry, the more that we can really understand just how important it is to orient. And this is how we take back our sovereignty, by understanding where we're at and how things actually work. And so it's going to be a very big presentation, and I might even make it a two-part presentation, because it's going to be pretty big. So I'm working really hard on that. It's going to be pre-recorded and released on that date, November the 3rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So please put that on your calendar, and please make sure to share it again if you have found value in my first and second presentations. So, and I will be going a lot further into that content specifically here in the cubbyhole, and really demonstrate a lot more of the details. And I will take a lot more time, because there's so much that goes into it, and it's a big deal. So let's get into the last episode, number 69. That way we can really, you know, just be caught up and have a better understanding of where this is all going. And we got into eschatology. I really opened up eschatology in the last episode. I got into religious eschatology, dealing with the messianic age. I got into millennialism and apocalypticism. These are very important aspects to understanding religious eschatology. And this is dealing with historical eschatology, which is temporal. And that means it is the structure of human history through recording events in a chronological order. Okay, so this is a very, very important part that we must understand, that how people have just bought into the historical religious eschatology. And this is how people have been manipulated to, really not even manipulated, people just willfully have faith and believe in a lot of the historical information, especially from the biblical texts. And they believe it so much that it creates this future that they believe in. And that is the future that they look forward to, based off of historical events that they believe are true. And whether they're true or not, it is about understanding that people hold fast to these beliefs and they're looking to a future event that hasn't even happened yet, and they believe that it's going to happen. And this is really what gets us into a lot of trouble, because people don't have an understanding of the here and now. They don't have an understanding of the logical fallacy that comes with that. And also, really, truly, they don't understand mythical eschatology, which is something else that I got into, which is dealing with the non-temporal. This is dealing with the universal spirit, okay? Because spirit is timeless, right? And this is why it's so important to understand Osiris as timeless, because it's a mythical science that is timeless. It's teaching what spirit is as that which is timeless. It's universal. It's ubiquitous, right? And so this is all under the umbrella of psychological eschatology, which is something that I think you should understand separately from all the other eschatologies, but then to understand that the very first hermetic principle is the all is mind. The universe is mental. So the principle of mentalism, that is the psychological aspect of eschatology, which means that as we study the mind, we realize that all these eschatologies are vital to understand, okay, because it's all dealing with mind. And the more that we have an eclectic understanding of the eschatology, the more the mind becomes balanced, because it's all about equilibrium. That's what this is all about. It's all about fine-tuning the self into balance. So the psychological eschatology is very, very important to study, which, again, that is the umbrella. So really, all eschatology is very vital to understanding this whole spiritual awakening, okay, to where things come to an end, whether that be physical or mental materialism, okay? So the way that we're going to really understand this a lot further, a lot deeper, is going back into the ancient Egyptian eschatology, which is dealing with the solar mythos. This is where this science was perfected, and it's also where this science becomes deteriorated because of people's negligence, because of ego, and this is really where we get into a lot of trouble. And that's what we're trying to explain here on the Cubbyhole, is seeing where this has really come apart and why we're in this whole world of materialism that we find ourselves in currently, at least collectively. And so this is all, this can all be really symbolically understood in the zodiac. Okay, the zodiac is a very big, important part of understanding the eschatology, okay? Because symbolically, it really puts everything together. So you have to have the knowledge of the cult or the ritual of Osiris, as well as the big picture solar cult. And then you have to understand the cycles, okay? And so when you're understanding all these different cycles, when you're understanding all these different houses of the zodiac, and you're understanding the elements, you know, earth, water, air, and fire, and then spirit, that's really where everything starts to come together, okay? And so there's a lot that goes into this, and it's a very, see, that's the important aspect of understanding why we have to continue to do the eclectic research and really pay attention to what is not being said. Pay attention to where things are going. That's why, you know, I put together this Oculus presentation. If you haven't seen that, I definitely recommend that you watch it, because it's all about getting to the center. It's all about getting to the point. It's all about getting to the light. It's all about getting to the truth. Okay? It's all about alignment. And one of the ways that has really helped me in the alignment is not just, you know, studying the eclectic array of information, but just understanding what it is that's really affecting the human condition. And obviously, religion is a major factor in that. Media is a major factor in that. You know, man's law is a major factor, right? And so studying these things is really what's going to bring us closer to the truth, right? And all the mystery traditions that I'm going to share today, and then some, are very helpful in helping us realize this big picture. Okay, and that's what I'm endeavoring to do on this show. And so one of the most important mystery traditions or occult traditions is the esoteric Freemasonry. Esoteric Freemasonry has really helped understand all of this information, because true esoteric Freemasonry really is eclecticism. That's what it is. So, going through the underworld is all about the dark night of the soul. This is where we develop the eclectic approach to really start to fill that cup, okay? That sacred cup. Look at the bottom half of the zodiac as a cup. Look at it as a box, okay? And this is where, this is also, you know, the underworld is hell. Hell is the underworld. To go through hell is all about burning away the impurities of the material self, the lower self, the self that is clinging to the base desires. Okay, this is what's holding us back. This is what's holding most of humanity back from actually elevating in consciousness. You know, keeping most of humanity back from enlightenment. This is religion. It is a binding condition. So hell is where most religion tries to scare people from going to, by scaring them into staying in their religion, right? You know, so if you don't give yourself over to one of these religions, you're going to hell. Hell is where you're supposed to go. You're supposed to go through hell. You're supposed to go through the underworld. You're supposed to face your dark parts of yourself. You're supposed to face the ego. You're supposed to face the part of the self that is holding you back from your growth. So it's about the hellfire is about burning away your impurities of the material self. And so this is where we go to the death. Okay, this is why the bottom half of the zodiac is the tomb. And so going through death in the non-physical way, this is the material mind death. And so this is where we symbolically end in a tomb. And then the bottom half is the womb, where we're born again spiritually. Okay, so this bottom half is the darkness. the darkest, deepest place of the soul, of the self. And so this dark area is the soil. The soil is rich. The soil is rich because it has all of this information. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to cultivate the soil. This is the sacred, rich soil of the self, where you're trying to bring the riches into the cup, into the soil, to be able to grow a beautiful garden. That's why it's related to the Garden of Eden. Because it's a place, it is a sacred place, it is Amenta. And this black soil, which is related to Kemet, which is the ancient way to say Egypt, which is also about the Chem, which is alchemy, right? This is where we start in the soil and then grow up into light. So this is all about understanding this ancient Egyptian mythos, starting in the stellar, going into the lunar, and then those sciences being brought on into the solar. And this solar mythos, this solar science, is really what's going to help us understand the world that we live in. Okay? We must get back to pure forms. We must get back to understanding, first and foremost, what this mythos really is all about, but understanding that these cults, these hero cults, the stellar, the lunar, and the solar, these are post-totemic sociology. And so what we're trying to understand is this whole anthropology. We're trying to understand where these sciences come from and how this mythology has evolved. Okay, how it evolved from the stars down into the lunar or the moon and then on into the sun. And so this is all ancient Freemasonry. This is what's helping us understand not only the inner journey of the soul, but it's also helping us understand the spirit, the mind, the body, the brain. This is all about metamorphosis. It's all about understanding that we begin, especially when it comes to the zodiac, in the way that I've been showing how we start out in this materialism and then go down into the underworld to face our darkest self, to rise up, you know, spiritually. That is the metamorphosis. And the way that we do this is become aware of animism. Animism is all about understanding that spirit is found in all matter. So it is the animating spirit of the whole universe. It is found in all things. This is what helps us understand natural law. This is what helps us understand that until we become animistic in our worldview and really understand it, we really aren't going to understand free will. Free will is the choice that we are gifted with but cannot truly understand until we have developed ourselves out of the R complex control, the R complex control system. It is a natural system that controls the whole brain until we have developed our brain, where the neocortex, the newer part of the brain, becomes the executor. Because when the R complex is the executor, we live in materialism, we live in literalism, we live in solar worship, we live in a world that is run by control, that is run by dominators, that supports dominators, that supports man's law. So we have to understand deeply that we are living in a solar proxy world, because the sun is a proxy, or Jesus as a solar messiah, and all solar messiahs. There's many solar messiahs, but all solar messiahs, including Osiris, are a proxy for the sun, and the sun is a proxy for spirit itself, the one great spirit. And it's a very beautiful science, but what I keep on saying is, when we start to literalize it, which is very easy to do because people are not being educated, people are neglecting this science, people are forgetting this beautiful sacred science, people are occulting the science because they know it, and they know that they can hold people in materialism for their whole life under our complex mind control. We have to understand the proxy and then understand that right at the center is the animism. So what I got into on the last episode is, you know, because just remember that this whole solar proxy is what fuels the Abrahamic religions, especially the three major religions being Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. Okay, and Christianity is really the big solar religion, okay? And I think that's pretty evident. So as you really study this, as you really contemplate this, you will see the eschatology of these major religions is based in historical eschatology. And, you know, the three major Eastern religions being Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism, they're not necessarily historical eschatologies, but they are. You know, there's a lot that can be found in these traditions that is, you know, very beautiful. All these traditions, all these religions have very beautiful science embedded into their teachings. But you have to know how to read them. And I would say that if you have the knowledge of natural law, you're going to be able to have a shield against falling into one of these religious faiths, because that's what they require. These religions, especially institutionalized religions, they require faith, they require belief. So the way that we're going to really make sure that we don't fall into a religious trap is for us to understand not only what religion is, because religion, I just want to make this very clear, okay? Religion can be understood in two different ways. And obviously, anybody who's listening to this and has gone through all this information, you already know this, but I just want to reiterate the importance of religion, because when we understand that religion, when you break down the etymology of religion, truly, it means binding. It means to thwart forward progress, which means to thwart evolution. It means to thwart the development of consciousness. Okay, and that is the negative sense of what religion truly is. Okay, this is what I'm saying is the universal negative aspect of religion. Just take away the name religion. You don't even have to use the name religion. The negative way, the devolution, or the way that humans can stay stagnant is by having faith in a tradition or a religion, never really doing deep research, never using the trivium method, never using logic, never using any kind of discernment, just going into it blindly and believing what they're told, okay? Do you think that's going to elevate anybody and bring them closer to the creator or to nature or to understanding what's going on in the world? No. And you don't even need the word religion to explain that, okay? Because that just, people already know that that can't be a good thing. But that's what religion actually means in the negative sense. But in the positive sense, religion means binding, which means that there is only one true religion in this whole universe, and that is truth itself. Truth is always pulling you in. It is a magnetic force, if you will, that is always pulling you in. The R complex, though, wants that comfort, so it's always pushing away at the truth. So it's a resistance, okay? It's a force of resistance that is forcing itself away from the truth. Okay, to live as an animal, to live as a lower being, the lower part of the human, okay, which is animalistic, which is, you know, base desires. But if you stop resisting that means taking control of the R complex, you can move into truth. You can face the truth. And so one of the ways that you can do that is by being honest. That for first and foremost, be honest. That is, true spirituality is based in honesty. You cannot move forward truly and call yourself spiritual if you're not honest. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how dishonest you are to other people. I mean, that does matter, but there's only one aspect of the whole universe that knows if you're lying to yourself other than you, and that is spirit itself. That is the Akashic Records itself. That is truth itself. That is natural law itself. So that means that you might escape and get away with fooling other people into making them think that you're spiritual. But I guarantee you, you will not escape the sacred recorder of the universe. Okay, you will not escape the law. No one escapes the law. The capital L law, natural law, universal law, cosmic law, the law of one, God's law, however you want to call it, okay? And that brings me to the next thing that I was really getting into, which is syncretism. You know, syncretism is about understanding the similarities of especially in religion, but, you know, just like what I said, with all these different ways that you can call natural law. Because they're all saying the same thing. So the syncretism is finding the similarness. So what we're trying to find is what is similar, so we can find the truth, so we can discover the light, so we can become closer to having a big picture, centralized understanding. So going through this spiritual journey is all about understanding what I got into with the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Okay? So the beginning and the end, and then the beginning again. Okay, so the Alpha would be, you know, where you start. You start out in materialism. Then the materialism comes to, in the spiritual sense, the material comes to an end as far as being dominant, as far as the R complex being dominant. So then this is where we come to an end with materialism, and then spirit rises. This is the rebirth of spirit, or the second birth being the spiritual birth. So I know that I have taken up a lot of time explaining the last episode, but, you know, I have to put a finer point on this information. So hopefully you guys appreciate what I'm saying, and hopefully it is resonating. Now, before I get into the content, there is one thing that I wanted to add that I kind of just thought of recently, as far as, you know, adding on to this number 24. Okay. The number 24, I got into this when I talked about Osiris being the X, and I talked about the year 24 is the year of the X. But also the year of 23 is the year of the X, because it's the year of the five, right? So 23 and 24. 24 in the alphabet is the letter symbol of the X, okay? So that being said, I just thought about something that I find really interesting, and that is, and very telling. That is, I want to make this very clear. I'm not trying to predict anything when I say this. What I want people to do is entertain the idea and understand what the dark occult has the potential to do in this year, that you can see with your own two eyes what is actually going to happen politically, okay, in this country of the United States, okay? And I just want to make it very clear, and I don't think I have to make it very clear, I am definitely absolutely anti-political. Politics is such a mire, okay? Politics is just, when I hear people talking politically, all I hear is, you know, muck coming out of a sewer. You know, that is stinky, shitty muck coming out of a sewer. That's what it sounds like. That's what it smells like. I am anti-political, and I don't think that I have to really emphasize that any further, but I just want you to understand the way that these political puppets are used and how they relate to the things that I have been talking about, okay? And also how to understand what is potentially going to happen as a result of understanding numerology, understanding solar cycles, understanding the solar mythos and understanding Christianity and understanding, you know, we live in a Christian nation, okay? And it's important that we understand how the dark occult, how the rulers, how these dark psychologists, how these manipulators are using these pawns. They're using these puppets as a way to create this really solar ritual as a proxy for ushering in some kind of savior. So think about this. Because, you know, everybody's always looking for a savior. They don't want to be their own savior. So that's why people turn to religion. That's why people turn to presidents. That's why people turn to kings and different types of rulers. That's why people turn to law enforcement. It's because they're in need deeply spiritually of a savior, and they don't want to do the work, so they go to the material savior, right? So think about this number 24. The number 24 is very sacred. It's a very sacred day of the whole year. Think about what day that would be of a certain month. That certain month is the 12th month of the Gregorian calendar. That 12th month has one very sacred holy day that we all celebrate here in the States, and that is the 25th. So what is the Eve holiday? That is Christmas Eve. Okay, so think about that. Christmas Eve falls on the 24th. So think about the year that we're in, the 24th. Now think about the word Eve. So you say Christmas Eve. And what does Eve mean? It means that the time between evening and sunrise. So the time when the sun sets to the time that the sun rises. So think about this for a second. Okay, because this is all coming together when you think about the words that are being used and the numbers that are being used in correspondence with what's happening politically. So this is why Christmas Eve is the night before the dawn. Now, what political puppet has the name dawn? It's what people call the big orange head, right? And that big orange head, the orange man, is the solar man, okay? The solar puppet, the solar proxy, the solar messiah. So the circle being orange is a solar symbol. So what happens on the 25th of December? The birth, symbolically, and, you know, as a ritual that Christians take part in every year on the 25th, is the ritual of the birth of Christ, the solar deity, the solar Messiah, right? So that means that dawn is rising. Dawn means the rising sun. So there is a, think about this, the second coming, the birth of Christ, the second coming. who's running for president for the second time, or who's going to possibly get in office for the second time. It's the return of, it is the dawn, okay? The return of dawn. So, and there's so much more that I can say about it, but I really want you to think about that, okay? Because this is the year 24, and then next year is when the president of the country, this, you know, the so-called president, is going to take office in the year 25. So we're going from the Eve, this is the year of the Eve, and then next year is the year of birth. Okay? So it's the 6 to the 7 even, because 24 is 6 and then 25 is 7. So it's going from beast to connection with God. So it's this obvious God complex. To be the ruler is a God complex, right? So this is a major Christian solar cult ritual where they're using political puppets as proxy messiahs, okay? So I really hope that you're seeing the layers. So you have a proxy messiah that they're using, a political proxy messiah, overlaying the Christ proxy messiah, who is the proxy of the sun, the solar, and then the sun is the proxy of spirit. But people don't know that part. So that's what maintains this materialism in our world. And also remember what I said about primal fears. People are missing the sun. The sun, the solar political puppet sun, has left them, especially this right-wing group of believers who believes in this political government system. They are the ones who are maintaining their worship. Most of them are worshipers of Christ. Most of them are Christian. And therefore, they, deep down, subconsciously, they're looking for a Messiah. They're looking for the second coming. People actually believe that Donald is the second coming. Think about that. And it's because that's what they're yearning for. They have no idea that the real second coming has to be their own spiritual birth. Okay, so hopefully that is painting the picture very clearly of what's to come. Now, obviously you can put whoever you want in there. Anything can happen, but what I'm saying is you can see it. I'm painting the picture of what you can actually see with your own two eyes in your mind or your eye. You can see it. If you can see all the parallels, if you can see the symbolism, and understand what I'm really saying, you can see it very clearly of what they're planning on doing. How could they not? So as we start to really learn all what these religions are saying and learn this eschatology, because remember, the 25th is the rebirth, okay? And this is what I'm getting to. This is what I'm really trying to help people understand, because remember, the winter solstice starts on the 21st of December, and then the 25th is when the sun rises 1 degree north, which means that's the beginning of when the sun starts its trek. And I'm going to get really deep into that as we move forward. Okay, there's a lot that can be said about it, but just really pay attention and you will see for yourself, okay? Okay, well, that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get into the content for this show. And, you know, since man's earliest records of the science of final things in this early solar cult 100,000 years ago, there's been a massive effort for man to try to understand and preserve the celestial sciences and the terrestrial sciences, and do so in order to better understand agriculture, but also to understand the higher self, because it's all about the development of self and being able to do so through the evolution of the mythos and the perfected eschatology, which is the perfected eschatology is really at the height of Osiris. So, and that would be, you know, anywhere between 20,000 to 50,000 years ago. So the idea that there's a beginning and an end is especially a very peculiar measurement in nature, as there's really nothing that we truly know with a beginning and an end. So think about that, because energy, as we know it, it transfers. It always transfers. So what is energy? The way that we understand energy is through protons. We understand energy through neutrons, because these are the aspects of a nucleus. And a nucleus doesn't just disappear. This is what makes up an atom. Okay? So atoms don't just disappear. They transfer. They're forever. They've always existed. They just are. Right? So we just see things going through cycles, which are continuous. And cycles help us measure beginnings in degrees. You know, like the moon and the sun waxing and waning angles, right? So, you know, because when we look at the moon is going through its waxing stage where it's gaining more light day by day through a 14-day period. And then it is waning, going through its waning angles where it's losing light day by day through a 14-day period, right? And then the sun, if we watch it all through the annual year, then we will see that it gets higher and lower depending on, you know, the solstices being, you know, in the northern hemisphere, the sun is in its waning stages, going through the winter solstice. And then it begins its waxing angles going on up to the summer solstice, right? So understanding these cycles, understanding things like births and deaths of ourselves or other sentient beings or other life forms, this is what helps us measure beginnings and ends, okay? But again, it's all atoms. It's all forever. Everything is in motion. Nothing actually dies. Nothing actually begins. But we have an understanding of the beginning and end because of these measurements. So life is continuous, but the physical experience that we each have, this is what comes with, you know, somewhat of a beginning and an end that we really can't, you know, we're not able to really put a finer point on it, especially in the state of darkness or ignorance. That's why we turn to things like cycles. That's why we turn to allegories. That's why we turn to symbols or stories, because these things help us better understand the Alpha and the Omega. They help us understand the beginning and the end. That's what helps us understand life. That's what helps us prepare ourselves. That's part of the journey. That's part of the spiritual journey, to become self-aware. And again, you know, this is why belief and faith will never lead anybody to truth. This will never lead anybody to any real conscious connection to the Creator or to nature. Okay? Yes, of course, I do believe that we can have a connection to the Creator through emotion and through feeling. I really do believe that. Okay? But there can never be a conscious connection to the Creator, ever, unless there is eclectic knowledge, unless there's serious research. That's what knowledge is for. That's what the word is for. The Logos. So having faith and belief all through history has always become based in man's laws. This is what has always kept us in the world of materialism and deception. It's all deception. So let's go to the first slide for this show. And the first slide says eschatology, final things, with the overhead view of the round table with the six major religions of the world. And obviously, I'm not saying that's absolutely true, but three of those definitely are the three major religions, and that would be Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, okay? But these are all six of these religions that you see here are the ones that I covered on the last show. And also, I just want to make mention that this is not limited to these particular religions, okay? There are more religions, and I'll cover that as I move forward. But this is dealing with the exoteric and esoteric eschatology, which is, again, the study of final things or end times, okay? And before I break this slide down, I just want to remind everybody of the word syncretism and what it really means, because syncretism is so important to understand when looking for the truth. It means combining religions or cultures or ideas because they are describing similar aspects, but in different ways. Okay, so we have to learn how to listen for the same thing, but in, you know, said in different ways, said in different languages, said in different vernaculars. And that is where we begin to find the truth. And of course, you know, having the master key of natural law, this is what's going to help us further know how to find the truth in between all of these religions and all these traditions. So you see there's in this outer layer or this outer part of the table, and then there's the inner circle part, right? These are all divided into six parts, okay? And the reason I did six is, again, because I only covered six religions on the last episode, okay? So we're trying to get to the truth, which is in the middle. It's central, okay? And this is symbolically expressing that all of these religions have something important to bring to the table. And I'm talking about the actual teachings that they have, okay? So they can all be understood exoterically or both exoterically and esoterically, which is what I recommend, okay? So just think of the inner esoteric layer as symbolically the underworld. And think of it as, also think of it as a veil to the truth, okay? Because that's what people can't see. They can't see the truth. And it's because there's a veil. Well, what is that veil? And this is why putting this symbol of King Arthur to use in this way is so valuable, because in King Arthur, in the legend of King Arthur, this circle, this inner circle, would be akin to Avalon, or the mist of Avalon, because it's the mist that you can't see through, but you have to go through it to get to the truth. And the table is symbolically a gift to King Arthur. It's a gift because it's a gift of having the ability to attain eclecticism by, you know, gaining a full picture understanding. So we all have this ability. We all have this gift. Okay? Most of us never use this gift, but we all have this. So this is a universal table to learn how to be eclectic. It's, you know, typically divided into 12 equal parts. And, you know, we have to understand those 12 equal parts are, and I'm not, you know, trying to corrupt this symbol by not putting 12 equal parts, because in the tradition of King Arthur, there are 12 knights at the round table. Okay, so those 12 knights are analogous to the 12 houses of the zodiac and the 12 months of the calendar. Okay, and so that is very important to understand. But also, I'm using the table in a way with, you know, equal parts. Okay, so I just want people to not be confused by that. I'm actually realizing it now that that can cause, hopefully not, but cause some kind of corruption in people's minds. But really, the point is to understand that the round table is all about eclecticism, okay, aside from the 12 parts. But the 12 parts are very, very important to understand, okay? They really are. But a lot of people don't even know that the 12 parts of the round table is actually 24. So, you know, there is that too, because each house or each knight is black and white. It has a black and white aspect to it. Okay, a dark side and a light side to it. So that means there's actually 24 parts of the zodiac, especially, but that you can apply that to the 12 knights of the round table. And, you know, again, what I'm using the round table divided into 6 parts is really just to show the putting to use the way that you can be eclectic with all these religions and, you know, help you get to understanding the mystery traditions that you see inside that can help you understand these religions, because that's what's really going to sharpen us and get us closer to truth. That's what's going to cause a spire within, right? Because a spire, think about a pencil. Think about the round part of a pencil leading up to the lead of the sharp point of the pencil. That's a spire. Or look at the top of a pyramid. you know, from the bottom of the pyramid going all the way up to the point, that's considered a spire. So it's about sharpening ourselves to the point. And, you know, think about this. Even there's a little bit of green language in the sense of, you know, spire or to, you know, going to a spire. Aspire, the word aspire means, you know, directing your hopes, directing your ambitions towards achieving something like truth, right? To aspire to truth. That's what we're trying to do by becoming eclectic when looking at this type of information. So I hope I'm being very clear on this, and I hope that you understand what I'm presenting, because this is very powerful when you really are able to sort it out like this and understand what you're really looking at and understand this is symbolically where it all has to go. If you really want the truth, you have to go through the mist. And that mist is not just, you know, comparative religion, it's also comparative traditions, mystery traditions, because, and that's another reason Avalon is associated with mystery, the mystery, the mist story. Okay. So, you know, the other religions that I could have put on here and I did not, you know, you could think about, there's the religion known as Jainism, another Eastern tradition. You have Shinto, you have Baha'i, you have Zoroastrianism, you have Confucianism, and Sikhism. And so, you know, these are just another six religions that you could look into, and I definitely recommend that you become familiar with these other religions, because, again, the more you become aware of these different religions, they all have something to bring to the table, okay? And they can all help us understand and bolster what each other one is trying to say, what they're trying to get at. You can tell, if you have the knowledge of the philosophy of truth, if you have the knowledge of natural law, if you have the knowledge of mind control, if you have the knowledge of, you know, some kind of knowledge of understanding messiahs and the creator, you can really start to have the armor, the spiritual armor, to deal with so much of the sorcery that is taking place within a lot of these religions or religious institutions that are using these religions as a form of control over one's mind. And they are. All these religions are being used in one way or another to control people's minds. Okay? And that's because people have blind faith. People just go along and believe what they're being told and never go any further. Most people choose a religion and set into that religion. They don't go any further in their research, and therefore they stagnate and they never really truly evolve. They never really truly find the truth. Some people break out of those religious mazes. Some people break out of the binding, you know, faith that they have. Some people are, you know, they suffer enough to where they actually start to break free of the stronghold of these types of religions. So, you know, in this case, when trying to find the truth, which is, you know, out in the open and hidden also, it's all interconnected all throughout these religions. Truth is interconnected all throughout these religions. This is about doing the difficult research, okay? To go deeply into the underworld of knowledge aka the esoteric, the inner, you know, the world of the occult, which is the hidden. So it's about going into these certain types of mystery traditions to further understand these major world religions with a balanced perspective, an open-minded, balanced perspective, which really can't be truly understood or appreciated without understanding the philosophy of truth or the science of natural law, something most people don't have any understanding of. They're simply not aware. And not just because this science has been occulted, it's because, you know, most people are living in a state of ignorance, willful ignorance at that. So down at the bottom left, and hopefully people can read this. I know that it's a very small text, and that's just because I really wanted people to see this big image of the round table. But you might have to zoom in a little bit, but I'll go ahead and read it to you and explain it. So exoteric eschatology refers to the study or interpretation of the end times and also final events or the ultimate destiny of humanity from a perspective that is accessible and understandable in the vernacular by the general public. Okay? So it's very easy for people to grasp. And unlike esoteric eschatology, which involves hidden or mystical teachings, exoteric eschatology typically encompasses mainstream or widely accepted interpretations found in religious texts, doctrines, or philosophical traditions that are openly available to all believers or followers. Okay, so it may focus on teachings regarding the end of the world, judgment, salvation, or the afterlife that are presented in a straightforward, literal manner without the deeper symbolic or metaphysical interpretations often found in esoteric approaches. So I know that's a mouthful, but this is really what can and actually has led to the overall materialism of the mind in this world. So this is the surface level understanding, the outer view, the easy to see aspects that require only belief or only faith, you know, some kind of limited review even. So this is the limitation area of the research where truth is still very veiled and unknown. So this is the area where most of humanity is stuck or dwelling willfully. And the outer circle is dealing with the five senses, you know, being limited to the five senses. This is what makes people become literal in their thinking. And this is what leads people to a religio-materialism mindset. They literalize their views, they literalize their beliefs of these religions rather than question them, to get to know them, right? People don't question the creator. They don't question man as the authority who have written these books. So the questioning is the part that most people leave out. But of course, you know, not having the spiritual armor of moral law or natural law, this can make that very difficult, because not having that armor can lead to accepting the stories and the text as being literally true and with no real moral checking, no real moral grounding. You know, don't question God's authority from the Bible, okay? From the texts. Don't question that, okay? But that's how, that the funny thing is, that's how you learn it. That's how you learn God's authority, is by questioning it, by getting to the science of it, not just having blind faith in it. That's how the mind can be taken. And that is how the mind is taken. Because even though you might believe in something that is actually true, because you have faith and belief in it, now you can have faith and belief in everything that is taught with it. And therefore, that's where your mind can be taken. That's where it can be controlled. So it becomes very easy to just go with it. And why not? You know, many other people are doing it or believing in it, and their lives, at least on the surface, don't really look bad. And that's why other people take to it, because they see other people doing it. It's not so bad. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't they? But what makes these religions work is the withholding of the principles of enlightenment, being the self-defense principle and the non-aggression principle. And, you know, definitely not together either, or at all, really. It's void of true spirituality, which is based in the pursuit of truth, the ultimate principle. Okay? The ultimate principle is truth. Without truth as the principle, without being principled, your foundation will not be sound. It will crumble. It will be very weak. That's why building your foundation eclectically with all this information is really going to build strength right at truth, because it's based in truth. See? So that is why it's so important to be eclectic. So all these religions have something spiritual to bring to the table, but it's up to the individual. It's up to you to take the arduous journey to the truth and go through the depths of the mysteries to find that, especially with the key of logic and really the whole trivium process and also the quadrivium, okay, the liberal arts. And so we go to the realm that most seem to ignore and throw out because their religions are like, oh, you know, don't go into hell. You know, be afraid of hell. Because see, they associate the mist of Avalon as hell. They associate the mist of Avalon or the mystery traditions as witchcraft. And so they say, stay out of that. And people believe it. So this is what most people ignore. They ignore the esoteric, which is the key that you need to get to the truth. You have to have that openness and that drive, that willpower to go through the underworld, to go through the mist of Avalon. So you have on the right, the bottom right, you have esoteric eschatology, which refers to the study or interpretation of the end times and final events, or the ultimate destiny of humanity from a perspective that is considered mystical, hidden, or restricted to certain initiates or practitioners. And unlike mainstream or traditional interpretations of eschatology found in religious texts or doctrines, esoteric eschatology involves deeper symbolic, allegorical, or metaphysical understandings of concepts such as the end of the world, judgment, salvation, or the afterlife. It often draws on esoteric or occult traditions, symbolism, and mystical teachings to explore the mysteries surrounding the ultimate fate of the universe and the human souls. So that's dealing with the immortality. So this is all about understanding that we are not just limited to material. Okay? We're not just limited to our five senses. So this is dealing with refining these religious teachings down by drawing out truth through different tools, spiritual tools such as esoteric systems or occult mystery traditions, in order to really have a big picture understanding of what we're really dealing with. It helps us find the dogma and draw out the truth. And this is done with learning the occult traditions, and dealing with the universal language of symbolism and green language and sign language and sacred geometry, mythology, allegory, syncretism, you know, and there's so much more. And of course, natural law. It's all truly dealing with morality. Okay? So, you know, just think about this. Think about all the esoteric systems we can use to further make sense of these religions without a literal limitation. And also, just keep in mind that all these mystery traditions that we see in the middle circle, they can help us understand just about all religions. Because when you really see the syncretism, you really start to see how connected everything really is. But there are direct mystery traditions that do connect to certain religions. Like, for instance, tarot or Kabbalah can be used for Judaism, Rosicrucianism or the King Arthur legend, or Gnosticism can be used for Christianity. Sufism can be used for Islam. And alchemy or Hermeticism can be used for everything. Both of those traditions are universal in most ways. Okay, and I'm not saying I completely agree with everything that's taught in the alchemical tradition or the Hermetic tradition. I actually don't agree with a few things or a lot of things in a lot of these traditions or religions, especially the religions, but and the way that they're taught. But I can discern, okay, I can find all kinds of beautiful truth that is stored within the teachings of all of these mysteries and all these traditions or all these religions. So you have Taoism that can be understood with alchemy and Hermeticism. You have Theosophy for Hinduism and really all Eastern traditions and Western traditions. Same with Thelema. The occult philosophy of Thelema is a very beautiful tradition that has a lot of beautiful knowledge, just like Rosicrucianism. And also runes, you know, I'm just now really getting into runes, but it is a very powerful and very rich tradition that can help us understand the Germanic paganism, and also understand the sacred divine wheel of the alphabet and how all the runes fit together. There's so much that goes into the runes, and the way that I see it is, you know, and this is just from my own research, is that the main centralized mystery, occult mystery tradition is esoteric Freemasonry, which is really what brings all of this information all together. And it is just so rich with helping us understand eclecticism, because that's what true esoteric Freemasonry is. It is about comparative religion. It is all about getting back to the truth. You know, one of the main symbols of esoteric Freemasonry is the circle dot. Well, that's what the round table is. So there's a lot of beauty that you can find through all these traditions. And the symbolism is so rich, and it's filled with beautiful instructions that can really help us go further back and, you know, again, build this bridge from the modern day back into antiquity. It's about helping us understand the world that we live in. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly share some esoteric eschatologies of these mystery traditions just to help people see the syncretism that is found between them. Okay? So, just as I stated in the last episode regarding the exoteric religions, I don't consider myself to be any type of scholar or know every detail regarding these religions or these mystery traditions. But I am continuously studying these traditions. It's an ongoing study. And I probably will study this type of information till, you know, the end of my physical life. And I care about this information that I've researched regarding these traditions. And what I'm really trying to get at here in particular is the syncretism of the eschatology between all of these religions and mystery traditions. Just to show the similar themes and concepts, because it's all surrounding this idea of a true spiritual awakening. So if we really listen to the eschatologies from each tradition, we will see great connections, very deep, great, beautiful, rich connections. And we'll begin to see the deeper overarching theme of death and rebirth, especially mental material death and spiritual mental rebirth. And if we really pay attention to this theme, then there can truly be an undoubtedly view of what needs to be done internally. And this is what so many spiritually learned men and women have attempted to attain and preserve for progeny and posterity. And the teachers behind this great, beautiful science, the inspiration behind this awesome science is the sun, it's the moon, it's the stars, and it's the planets, as we'll continue to see as we go through this information. So we're going to go to the very first slide that says eschatology of Rosicrucianism, okay? And again, what I want you to do while going through these slides is I want you to pay attention to the overarching theme. I want you to pay attention to the concept, okay? Because the concept is ultimate. It is the syncretism, okay? This is where we're going to find the similarities in order to find the truth. So another thing that I want you to keep in mind is I want you to stay oriented with the zodiac in your mind, okay? I want you to have the zodiac oriented in the way that I've shared it, with understanding the dark at the bottom half of the zodiac and then light at the top half, okay? And then just think about the direction of the sun going through the houses of the zodiac, all right? So just really think about that. Keep that in your mind while you're going through this information, and there is where you'll find what these mystery traditions are actually preserving, okay? And so this first of these mystery traditions that we're going to go through is Rosicrucianism. So the eschatology of Rosicrucianism. And before I read the slide, I just want to say that Rosicrucianism comes from Rosicrucian. And the reason that is because Rosicrucian is Christian Rosenkreutz, which is the mythical figure of Rosicrucianism. And he represents the soul that is journeying through the underworld, gaining knowledge, gaining an understanding, going through the death and rebirth process into enlightenment. And the word Rosicrucian is a combination of rose and cross, or rosy cross. And so on the slide it says, it's a deeply intertwined pursuit of spiritual enlightenment and the evolution of human consciousness. Central to Rosicrucian eschatology is the belief in a gradual unfoldment of divine wisdom, really the unfoldment of natural law, in the pursuit of a utopian society on earth, meaning, you know, reaching for perfection and freedom. It's not a literal place, okay? Utopia, a lot of people don't know this, but utopia actually means not a place. And the reason it's part of this eschatology is because it's all about understanding the law of freedom and also understanding the principle of polarity. Because the truth is that when you think of the law of freedom, okay, because the law of freedom is proportional to the pursuit of a utopian society on Earth. Because as the law of freedom states, as a society becomes more moral, that society becomes more free. And the opposite of that would be, as a society becomes more immoral, that society becomes more enslaved. Okay? Now, are we ever going to reach an ultimate world of slavery? Or are we ever going to reach an ultimate world of freedom? Well, I would have to say, in degrees, we will go in those directions. And I would say we're going more into enslavement. But for the sake of what this actually means, is that the utopia or utopian society that the Rosicrucian order is striving for is simply all about becoming moral and moving in the direction of freedom. That's really all that means. Freedom, the world of freedom, like the word freedom is not an actual place. The word slavery is not an actual place. Okay? It is a condition. Okay? That's really all it is. And a utopian society is a condition of freedom. Okay? That we should be striving for. And that's what that order helps those who are part of the Rosicrucian order do. Okay? That's what it's meant to do anyway. Obviously, there's dark forces within all these mystery traditions, and you can see very clearly when you get into this work that there are dark Rosicrucians and there are light Rosicrucians. Okay? So Rosicrucianism eschatology is about envisioning a harmonious future with nature, transcending materialism, which is also known as Kamaloka, which is a Buddhist term, which is all about base desires. And then you know, transcending materialism, and then after that, attaining spiritual enlightenment. And again, think about the zodiac and the path of the sun going through the houses. This is part of understanding this symbol that we see on the right, being the rosy cross, okay? So it's very important to stay oriented when you're looking at this cross too, because the top can be east or north, okay? The top part of the cross. And that's very, very important to pay attention to, because it's all about orienting the symbol in correspondence to the zodiac. And I'm not going to get into that on here, but you know, that is just a very important point, because it really does have a lot to do with the eschatology. Being able to go in the direction east to find the light, just like in esoteric Freemasonry, and then to orient yourself, okay, right in the crux. And so it's very advanced, but it's a very beautiful science. And this tradition does incorporate elements. It's very rich in Christian mysticism and hermeticism and alchemy. And one of the concepts of Hinduism, okay, because this is Rosicrucianism and Hinduism are intertwined to some degree, okay? So if you're trying to understand Hinduism, Rosicrucianism can really help understand the deeper aspects of Hinduism. So one of the deeper concepts of Hinduism is what's called the Kali Yuga, which is intertwined with Rosicrucianism, and it's about the spiritual degradation, you know, the separation from nature. And the Kali Yuga is about materialism being extremely dominant internally, which is what expresses externally. And Kali, the goddess, is very much the embodiment of the lower half of the zodiac. So when you think of the zodiac, think of the darkness, okay? Think of the bottom half, the very bottom of the zodiac. This would be akin to Kali. And the word Kali actually means black or dark. So Kali is known as being the last and fourth, and also the worst of four, what's known as Yuga or Yugas, the four Yugas in the Yuga cycle. So that means it represents the end of a cycle. That's what Kali means in the Hindu tradition. So a Yuga is a cycle of four epochs of time during a one great year. Okay. And this, what that means is it takes half of one great year, being 25,868 years, to cycle through all four yugas. So that would be a period of roughly 12,934 years, which constitutes a yuga cycle, whether that be the ascending cycle or the descending cycle. So the ascending cycle takes 12,934 years, and then the descending cycle takes about 12,934 years, which is what creates this one great year being 25,868 years. Okay, so that's a full 1 year great cycle to cycle through all the houses of the zodiac. Okay, and supposedly we're at the end of the Kali Yuga cycle. Okay, so this is the darkest part, the death area of the cycle. And so this is important in understanding the stellar mythos as well, because the stellar mythos is dealing with the one great year cycle. Okay, so that's really, really important to see that parallel, because if we're trying to really understand this very ancient science, we have to see how these different religions and traditions have preserved these numbers, these sciences, these cycles, these time periods, and what they call them in order to preserve that science. So Rosicrucianism, in its essence, is a very, very ancient system that preserves the spiritual transformation and the return to nature through the, you know, cosmic law or natural law. And the symbol that you see on the right, the rose, is a symbol of resurrection of the spirit. It means rise or to have rose. And this means to rise from the middle or crux, because it's all about where the spirit and the material come together at the crux in order to rise that fifth point, okay, which is the rose. And this is all about spiritual transformation. You know, the flower, think about a flower, it blooms, right? And that represents spiritual development. And it also represents, you know, when a flower opens up, it's because it's taking in light. It's taking in sunlight, okay? And that means light is akin to knowledge. So it's about receiving information. It's about having the heart open to receive the information of the Most High, truly. So it represents hope for liberation and enlightenment after the dark cycle of the Kali Yuga. And the Kali Yuga is akin to the Omega being the end, okay? The end of a cycle, the end of an age. And also, this flower represents the Philosopher's Stone. And it's also typically a flower of five petals, which means spirit, okay? Because five is always associated with spirit. And another thing to keep in mind is that this is just one expression of the symbol that's used in Rosicrucianism. There's many different crosses with roses that are formed a little different or look a little different. And I recommend that people actually, you know, do some research and look for yourself at what those different crosses look like, because they are very rich symbols, and there's a lot that you can pull from them. And also, you know, think about this. The cross represents sacrifice, and it also represents the weight of truth. Truth is weighty, especially in a world of ignorance and darkness. So there's so much more to be said about this eschatology of Rosicrucianism. So we're going to go to the next slide. We're going to go to the eschatology of Gnosticism. And Gnosticism is centered around the idea of spiritual liberation and the return to the divine realm. And Gnostics believe that humanity is trapped in the material world, which is ruled by an inferior creator, the Demiurge. And this is something that I don't partake in. I don't believe in. This is where I would have to say that even if this is an allegory, it's not a very good allegory, because the truth is humanity is not trapped by some inferior evil creator. I don't buy into that, because the truth is we have free will. And not only that, but there's no such thing as being, you know, trapped, because we have the ability to liberate ourselves. Okay, we're not trying to escape the material world. We're simply trying to liberate ourselves from the material mind. Okay, what we're trying to do is find out what we're really here to do. We have the ability to go through a spiritual development from the material state of mind. That is not a material world. Okay, so we have to understand that the creator is not an evil creator. Okay, the creator, when you really understand the creator is love. The creator has created every single infinite way possible for humans to develop themselves and rise up out of their material mindset. Okay, when it becomes dominant, we have that ability. Obviously, us humans have really buried ourselves very deeply into the ground. And that's part of understanding this Kali Yuga, because we are going through a process right now. We are going through a very dark process. We are going collectively, we are going through the deepest, darkest, most vicious parts of hell. And so what we're trying to do is liberate ourselves from the material mindset, not from the material world, because as we find spirit, it's about raising that spirit back into the material self, because that's what the cross really is all about. Because it's all about the material and the spirit coming together. Okay. So I'm going to continue to read. Eschatological teachings in Gnosticism often revolve around the awakening of gnosis. That's what Gnosticism is. That's what it leads to, is gnosis. To have a knowing through experience. Gnosis really is about epistemology as well. So it is the divine knowledge which allows individuals to transcend the limitations of the material realm and reunite with the ultimate divine source. So Gnostic eschatology emphasizes the role of a divine savior figure, such as the Christ or Sophia, who assists humanity in its journey of spiritual awakening and redemption. The end times in Gnosticism are seen as a cosmic event where the divine sparks trapped within the human souls are liberated by, you know, the great work, or by reading, by studying, leading to the restoration of the divine order and the dissolution of the material world. Ultimately, Gnostic eschatology offers a vision of salvation through knowledge and spiritual enlightenment, where the soul transcends the cycle of birth and death to dwell eternally in the realm of the divine. So, again, I don't believe that the Creator created beings like human beings with their souls trapped in the material world or their material body. I don't buy into that at all because, for one, what that represents is separation. Okay, so I would say this is just a pretty important fallacy that needs to be called out. And I would say that the truth is that the marriage, the union, has just not taken place. They are the material and the spirit have not unified yet because the spirit really just hasn't been awakened. The Kundalini has not been awakened. And so it's just waiting. It's dormant. It's not trapped. It's dormant. It's there if you want it. It's there if you need it. But it's not trapped. Okay? It's not trapped. That would be like saying that a seed in the dirt is trapped and it needs to be liberated out of the dirt. That wouldn't make any sense. The seed has it's a potential to sprout and grow, and it might not. You know, the seed might not grow, and that's okay. It is what it is. So if it needs to, it will. That's what we have to understand. So, and I would say we could really use some spiritual help from a lot of people who are very dormant spiritually. But again, it's like Godzilla. Godzilla only comes, allegorically, only comes when the time is right. Okay? So collectively, I would say right now, let's be honest, the time is not right for people to really have a massive awakening. Do I think there is an awakening going on in this world? Yes, but in pockets, very small pockets at that. But it's something, right? It is something. It's not like there isn't some type of awakening, but I would say that the mass amount of people in this world are actually going more in the direction of death or sleep, okay? The state of sleep, than there are people who are awakening. I think that's pretty evident for anybody who's really paying attention. Okay, and even people who are barely paying attention can see that, okay? But let's look at this symbol on the right. So the symbol that we see here is the combination of the Tau cross with the zodiac wheel on top. And this is what's known as the cross of light or the Gnostic cross of Christ. And there are many different interpretations or many different expressions of this cross. Okay, this isn't the only cross that represents Gnosticism, but it represents the material horizontal line crossing, combining with the spiritual vertical line in the heart, right in the center of the whole symbol. And the top cross that's encompassed by the divine circle, this would be akin to the head area of the self with the crosshairs at the third eye. So it's about mind, body, and soul or spirit, okay? And it's to help understand the celestial and the terrestrial cycles that are reflected inwardly as well, Okay, that's why it has this zodiacal wheel. So there's so much about Gnosticism. A lot of beautiful information, but again, you got to call out when things do not seem right. And you got to make sure to take the good and also take the bad in order to understand your spiritual armor, okay? So really, that's what it's about. Because we're here to find the truth. And we're also here to gain the dogma in order to know how to deal with dogma. So we're going to go to the next slide that says Eschatology of King Arthur. And this is a very big mystery tradition or myth. So one prominent eschatological theme in Arthurian legend is the belief in the return of King Arthur. This idea stems from various medieval prophecies and legends that suggest Arthur did not die, but was taken to Avalon. That's very important, where he would be healed and await a time of need when Britain would call upon him again, symbolically, of course. So this parallels the Christian idea of a messianic figure returning in times of crisis. Arthur's return signifies hope and renewal, a belief that a great leader will return to restore order and justice to a troubled world. This mirrors the Christian belief in the second coming of Christ, where Jesus returns to establish a new era of peace and righteousness. So, this eschatology of King Arthur is vital because it preserves our lineage back to Egypt through Britain. And King Arthur's Round Table is the sacred table of study. This is the sacred table of comparative research. And of course, it is the zodiac. And Avalon is the esoteric eschatology. Okay, think about that. Because it is the mist that must be gone through in order to understand the rejuvenation process, the true spiritual awakening. The sword in the stone that we see on the right, this is what symbolizes the deepest, darkest aspects of the subconscious mind. It symbolizes the spirit awaiting to be raised, to be pulled up. And once the sword is raised with the end pointing up, this symbolizes raised or fully raised. Okay? So when the sword is down, when it's pointing down, we have to remember that is the direction of west or south, okay? You have to understand it in both directions. But to understand that the sword pointing down is in the sacred feminine, okay? Because this is where the truth is found. This is where we must go to find our care symbolically, okay? Also, think about the character in this myth of King Arthur, the Lady of the Lake. She is equivalent to Avalon, which is depicted as an island, something we see over and over again in a lot of these different movies like King Kong, Skull Island, where in the beginning of the movie, they're going on a journey through this big misty storm, and then they land on this island where they find King Kong and his family in a graveyard. So this is what helps us understand movies like that. And it's speaking directly to our soul. These movies, these cinematic advanced languages are speaking directly to people, whether they know it or not. They're speaking this type of very deep, rich information. And the legend of King Arthur and this and the Mist of Avalon, that's what can really help us understand what these movies are really saying, which then in turn can help us understand what's really going on in our current condition. But this Lady of the Lake, who is part of, who is the Mist of Avalon, who is Avalon, she is the water spirit. That is the sacred feminine, okay? So she represents rejuvenation and renewal. She's the one who grants King Arthur the sword, the Excalibur sword. And this means she represents care. Because the only way that King Arthur can pull the sword from the stone is through her, which represents care. Care is required to be able to pull that sword from the stone. So she's the sacred feminine. She's the depths of Avalon. She's the spirit. So it's about finding truth that is set in stone. So think about that. It's about finding truth in set. Because the truth is set. Right? The truth is set in stone. The sword is set in stone. Think about that. Think about that, because it's about the lost light. The sword represents truth. Truth is light. It is set in stone. And there's no coincidence that the word, the archetype, the Netcher, the Egyptian god Set, is in stone. Okay? Because that's where we're going to find the truth, is set in stone. That's why these great pyramids are so powerful to understand, because they are where we're going to find truth set in stone. So we're going to go to the next eschatology, which is the eschatology of Kabbalah. So if you can go to that slide. So Kabbalah, at its core, the Jewish mystical tradition of the Kabbalistic eschatology envisions a divine plan for the ultimate redemption and restoration of the universe. This redemption involves the rectification of the broken aspects of creation, like Osiris being chopped up or broken up, and then the reunification of all aspects of existence with the divine source. Okay, so you got to see how that goes together with Osiris. Key concepts within Kabbalistic eschatology include the coming of the Messiah, which is, you know, truly that means you, the individual, the resurrection of the dead, and the establishment of a new spiritual order to be renewed in spirit. The eschatological journey is seen as a deeply transformative process for both individuals and the cosmos, leading to the fulfillment of God's ultimate purpose for creation. So this is about the principle of correspondence, which is that which is above is likened to that which is below, and that which is below is likened to that which is above. And that's what this tree really is all about. This is a tree of very deep, rich correspondence. And the sacred tree that conceals the coffin of Osiris in the ritual of Osiris is this tree of life. It is the container that awaits the seeker who possesses the care to be able to symbolically arrive at the invisible Sephiroth known as Da'at, with enough knowledge to be able to receive, you know, correct instruction from Da'at, aka knowledge of self. And these circles that you see, these are the Sephiroth. Each circle is a Sephiroth. And between the Tiferoth and the Kether Sephiroths that you see on the right, right in the middle of there would be Da'at, okay? So Da'at means knowledge. And so this area is very important because it's all about giving and receiving. The Da'at means to give and receive, because as you bring enough knowledge to the information, you will receive knowledge. You will receive more instruction from each one of these Sephiroths. Okay? Now, something that I've been covering lately quite a bit in the past five shows is the X symbol, the X letter. And as you can see in the bottom of this sacred Kabbalistic tree is what's known as Malkuth, the Malkuth Sephiroth, okay? And what do you see in that circle? You see the X. And this is the 10th Sephiroth, which means kingdom or earthly kingdom. And this is where heaven and earth, or spirit and material, come into a union with each other. So it's a type of vessel where divine energy rises or flows into the physical plane once the student has passed through this tree symbolically. Okay, this is the journey. You have to journey through the tree symbolically to be able to pass into this divine kingdom. This is where the ultimate manifestation of the kingdom takes place. So it is the principle or foundation for the whole tree, this Malkuth, okay? Just like a real tree with a trunk and roots. So you have to go, that's why the tree is so sacred in the words that we use. Because tree is three. Tree has roots, which means getting back to your roots. getting back to the origins, having a tree trunk is about having a sturdy foundation built on truth, right? So that's what this area also represents, is truth or principle of truth. So Malkuth is the initiation mark and the end mark. Okay, so this whole sacred tree is about becoming aware of the hero's journey through the realization of this tree being the creator's creation or the kingdom. It's a whole journey of self-actualization. That's what it is, to become self-actualized, because it's all about, again, correspondence. As above, so below, and as below, so above. As you go through each one of these Sephiroths, you are attaining instruction in order to go through each path, each pathway, in order to really come to understand the whole structure, the whole beautiful structure of reality. So there's a lot. It's very, very rich. And there is so much that you can pull from this beautiful, sacred mystery tradition. Now, a very important mystery tradition that I recommend you study with the Kabbalistic Tree of Life is tarot, the tradition of tarot. And so we're going to go to the next slide that says Eschatology of Tarot. And there is a lot that you can pull from tarot, from the tarot cards, regarding the eschatology of tarot. But I chose Death and Judgment because these really embody the depths of the eschatology of this tradition. And so that means these two cards in particular are vital to this study of final things. And the Death card represents the end of a cycle or phase in life, which is paving the way for new beginnings and transformations. It signifies profound change, inner growth, and the shedding of old patterns or attachments that no longer serve one's spiritual or personal development. And that's very, very important in order to understand that there has to be a death of the lower base desires and attachments to material ideas or material possessions. Okay. And in tarot eschatology, the Death card is associated with the concept of renewal and rebirth. And it suggests that through endings and transitions, there comes an opportunity for regeneration and revitalization. This process is essential for spiritual evolution and the unfolding of one's higher potential. And if you look at the Death card on the left, you'll see the sun setting between two pillars, which is symbolically the light going to its death. So just remember that an inverted five-star or five-pointed star pentagram, like you see on the flag on this card, is all about spirit being down, or light is down. And that means death. That's what that represents, okay? And then you see on that same black flag, you see the Roman numeral 13, which has a few different correspondences, but the one that I really want to point out is the 13 pieces of Osiris that are chopped up, that are found, but the one that isn't found is the phallus, right? So that's a major correspondence of this card, okay? And also, if you look really close, you'll see wrapped around the horse's neck is this band of the skull and crossbones, and this relates to the third degree of the tracing board of the third degree of esoteric Freemasonry. And this is very powerful because it's around the neck of a horse, okay? And always keep in mind that horse is associated with the zoo type, the Netcher Horus, okay? Because Horus, his zoo type has been a horse. And of course, horse is Horus. Horus is horse, right? So this is the zoo type preserving Horus as being associated with this death and rebirth. Okay. So then below the horse, you see the king is laying down. And the king has been decrowned. And anytime that you see the king on the ground decrowned, this represents dismemberment because crown represents the head. Okay, so Osiris is always in the ritual is dismembered. That means either chopped up or also beheaded. Okay, because dismemberment can mean beheaded or to be chopped up. And this is also highly associated with the Fisher King legend because the king or the father of King Arthur, Uther, represents the health of the land, whether that be the health of the land in the real world or the health of the land internally, spiritually. And the land is symbolically going through the winter solstice, which is symbolically where the material is going to die. This is all about Osiris being the king or the lord of the living. Okay? And so when Osiris is taken down or chopped up, murdered by his brother Set, the dark side, where the darkness swallows the sun, okay, at sunset, this is where the sun is going down to its lowest point in the zodiac, at the very bottom, in the southern part, okay? So this is why the land becomes barren, or it becomes cold and dry, and where food is not growing, okay? So that is why the king, being the sun, is associated with the land. So as the land has less sun, it has less health. And that's the same internally with ourselves. The more that we have less light within ourselves and less of an understanding of ourselves, the more we're in darkness. And therefore, we have to let go of that material self that is holding us back from our spiritual growth. So that's why we go through this material death into spiritual growth, right? So that is what this card represents. And so then you see right in front of the horse is the Pope archetype. And the Pope has this fish hat, which is called a mitre, and that's what indicates that this is the Pope, okay? The father, the Pope means father. It means Papa or father. And symbolically, the Pope represents the father of death. Okay, because this is all taking place at the time of the sun going to its lowest point, which is death, right? So the horse is Horus. Horus is the fish man, okay? Which is what I've talked about as in the stellar mythos. He looks like a crocodile head, which is the oldest version of the fish man. And we have to understand how this evolved and what it turned into, because it's all dealing with the fish who swallows the phallus of Osiris. Okay. And so the Pope represents the fish man. So the Pope really is a proxy for Horus the fish man. And when you really study this card and study the dark occult, you'll see how in depth this card really is and how close to reality it really is. It's a very, very powerful card to study. And you will see just how accurate this card is when you study some of the dark rituals that have taken place, especially in this country of the United States, being, you know, one of them being 9/11. Okay. So, first and foremost, this card is all about the internal art and science of self. Okay. That's what tarot is all about. It's all about understanding yourself esoterically, but also being exoterically in tune. Okay. Because you can't really understand the depths of esotericism without really understanding the exoteric. So we're going to go down to the bottom right with the judgment card. And the judgment card in tarot is deeply connected to eschatological themes, symbolizing awakening, renewal, and the culmination of a spiritual journey. So the judgment card often depicts figures rising from graves or emerging from the depths of the ocean, which is heralded by trumpets being blown by archangels. This imagery resonates with eschatological beliefs in various religious traditions, such as esoteric Christianity, where it symbolizes the last judgment and the resurrection of the dead. And really, this card can help with understanding the deeper aspects of any of the traditions that I've covered so far and the traditions that I'm going to continue to cover, especially dealing with final judgment and the resurrection of the dead. So the trumpet that you see being blown by this archangel is symbolically the major call to awaken beings from ignorance and up into enlightenment. And you can look at it as a fierce internal jolt of an awakening of the kundalini into a focus of reality and natural law, becoming aware of natural law. And it is a symbolic sound of vibration, of liberation from slavery by becoming a seeker of truth. It's a call to action. That's what this card represents. It's a call to action. It's about awakening the spirit to rise into sovereignty. And the advanced symbol that this is blowing into the subconscious mind is the symbol of the cross, or the four quadrants that are representing the zodiac. Because it's all about understanding that we have to rise from the depths with spirit into the material self, into the heavens. It's about bringing the earth and heaven into union with each other. So the figures that you see rising out of the boxes that you see that are naked, this represents submission to the Creator and realizing that there's no need to hide any longer. There's no need to lie to yourself any longer. There's no need to run away. There's no need to stay ignorant of truth. And that cross in the middle of the card is about becoming conscious of the crux. It's about becoming conscious of material and spirit coming together in union. It's about the feminine and masculine coming into a marriage. That's why you see a female on the right and a male on the left and a child in the middle. Because it's about the marriage of the two coming together to rise that middle pillar to the heavens, but with the earth. Because it's about building heaven on earth. That's what it's about. So that being said, I think I'm going to go ahead and end the show here. I just covered esoteric versus exoteric eschatology with the round table, and I really hope that you've found value in that, and I hope that it comes across very clear on what that really truly can help us do and help us understand. And I have covered the eschatology of Rosicrucianism, Gnosticism, the King Arthur legend, and also I covered the Kabbalistic Tree of Life eschatology and the Tarot eschatology. And of course, there's so much more that can be said about all of these traditions and the eschatology, but I just really wanted to make sure to cover what I felt was really important about each one. And there's so much more to cover, so much more eschatology to cover. And so we're going to get into a few more eschatologies on the next show. We're going to get into Sufism. We're going to get into Theosophy. We're going to get into runes. We're going to get into Thelema. We're going to get into alchemy, and eventually get into what these mystery traditions are preserving and religions that are preserving into their teachings that can really help us open up this whole mystery and understand where it all really comes from. And that way we can really begin to appreciate what has been done to preserve this knowledge. And it's all about taking back sovereignty. It's all about taking back responsibility. And I know that's what people don't want to hear, but it's the truth. And I'm going to continue to speak the truth the best I can. And I really hope it's inspiring you guys to go do, you know, further investigations into this type of work. And that being said, I really thank you for tuning in. And if you're interested for more shows, presentations, or news, you can go to cubbyhole.com. Also, if you have any questions regarding anything that has been talked about on the Cubbyhole, please email me at cubbyhole.com. And that is it for now. So I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening, and keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.